Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the attic that smells like a basement in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring Four Left Feet performing a tango of trivia, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we're doing another reassumption as suggested by a fan and friend. Our buddy Ralph, who's part of our game group, our Thursday night guys night game group, he suggested, hey, have you ever thought about reassuming the black hole?
The Disney movie from 1979?
Is what I said. Oh, that movie? Yeah. No, I hadn't, but I kind of remember it, and so it's on Disney Plus, so hey, that's what we're doing today. We're going to reassume 1979's Black Hole, and for those of you who don't know, a reassumption is where we find an older movie that we have probably seen once, or maybe not seen at all, but usually we like to have seen it before, because it's a reassumption.
Yes.
And see if we still like it, or if we even liked it before. Do we like it now? So we are doing The Black Hole from 1979.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the setup? You've seen this before, right?
Dude, I literally think that this is one of the first movies I ever saw in the theater.
Because, oh, wow. Okay.
Because in 1979, here's how old Kevin is. In 1979, in December, it came out in Christmas. It was a Christmas release, I believe, from my notes. And yes, it came out in December, right before Christmas. December 21st is one of those, hey, people go to movies around the holidays type movie.
Mm-hmm.
So in December 21st, 79, I would have been all of 5 years old. And I remember this movie. I know I saw this movie in the theater because I remember it being big, like bigger than my TV. I remember being dark and I remember being scary.
Yeah.
And this movie isn't really scary. I mean, but if you're five and you're in a theater, this movie's scary.
I believe it.
So that's when I saw it for sure. Maybe I saw it again on VHS. I don't know. But a movie theater memory and a VHS memory are really different.
I hear you. Yeah.
You never get as scared at home. I mean, unless you like turn the lights down and you're doing a scary movie thing and you're like really trying to be spooky about it.
Yeah, most of my VHS time was in the afternoons when the sun's still out. So
yeah, exactly, exactly. And I don't remember it that way. So, and it was a Disney movie, even though it was Disney's first PG movie ever.
First PG movie for Disney ever. That was crazy.
Yeah. So I think my parents would have been comfortable taking me to a movie like this.
Especially, do you know why it's rated PG?
Because it has hells and dams in it.
That's so funny. So silly.
Words we say freely on our podcast.
Yep. That makes it dark. It gives it an edge.
Yeah. It's really funny. So, Mike, why don't you just give us the initial breakdown of like the trailer breakdown of what this movie is.
This movie follows a U.S. space crew on the ship Palomino. The way it starts off is it's this crew is returning from a long mission exploring deep space. And as they're returning, they get a signal that there's a black hole in the area. And then along with that, they also get a signal that there's a ship in the vicinity of the black hole. That's not them. So mystery ensues. That's a jump off point.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So let's see. Let's do a little background on this movie. So this movie is obviously, and if you do research about it, this is a response to Star Wars. This is one of the Star Wars responses. This is Disney's hat in the ring. As far as Star Wars came out, took the cinema world by storm, and then people just started throwing hats in the ring. Did it with Battlestar Galactica on TV, and countless other, there's so many movies.
What's the one that MST3K spoofed the new season? Was that The Last Starfighter or something? What was it?
I don't know. Oh. I'm not sure.
There's one of those.
Yeah, well, there's tons of... Oh, I know. You're talking about the one that has David Hasselhoff in it.
Like the direct ripoff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I forget what that movie's called. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, though.
Comment on the post and let us know what we forgot.
Yeah, but there's so much stuff. Like the... I think that around this exact same time, Star Trek The Motion Picture came out. Was that the first Star Trek The Motion Picture? Was 70...
That era,
Nine. Yeah. And that's also a response to Star Wars, even though Star Trek existed before.
Yep.
It was like, oh, hey, they were digging for properties. And this is actually was a dug for property. This didn't originally just come out of Disney. This movie was conceived in the early 70s by guys who did things like the Poseidon Adventure and stuff. It was supposed to be a space-themed disaster movie.
Yeah, like the Towering Inferno. Dun, dun,
yeah. Dun. Yeah, it was all those same guys. And I guess it just kicked around Hollywood for years and years and years. And then when Disney's like, we need to do a space movie, this is what they chose. So, yeah. So it's got some heavy hitters at the time and even after the time in it. It stars Maximilian Schell, who you might just know by looks, but for sure people who know who Robert Forster is, and Joseph Bottoms and Yvette Mimieux, and Anthony Perkins.
Yes.
Anthony Perkins, he's the psycho guy.
He is.
And the great, we love him. We've talked about how much we love him, Ernest Borgnine.
Ernest Borgnine, absolutely.
Great. Academy Award winning actor, Ernest Borgnine.
And also the voice of Roddy McDowell.
Yeah, and Slim Pickens.
And Slim Pickens. Oh, so silly.
So we're going to, if you guys haven't seen this movie, go ahead and pause the podcast until you can see it, because we're going to wreck it all, because we like to go through it. We like to burn some time on the podcast, kind of going act by act as we go through. So,
yep, but you'll be on my team, because this is the first time I've ever seen this movie. So,
oh, it's really the first time you've ever seen it, huh? Yep.
So, they'll be with me and we can discuss it as
it's
such.
It's going to be interesting, because you have those eyes. See, because I couldn't tell you if I saw this again after I saw it initially in the theaters. I spent a lot of time rewatching this movie, going, I don't remember any of this. But then other parts of it, I was like, oh. You know, I really remembered stuff. Yep. And it's really funny because I'll tell you right now at the jump, this movie I came at it thinking it was a lot, like I said before, a lot darker, a lot scarier. There's a 5-year-old's memory here mm-hmm. of this movie. And of course I liked it back then. I think when you're 5, you like every movie that isn't like horrifying or whatever, but... And there are certain things, we'll get to it as we go through, but there are certain things in this movie that influenced stuff I saw later on in Star Wars, because I didn't see Star Wars in the theaters. I saw this movie possibly before I even saw Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think I saw Star Wars until I saw it on like cable.
Yep.
And we didn't get cable until at best 1980. So it
would have been a year later. Yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely saw this movie first. So it's interesting. And I think some of my memories of Star Wars intermingled with some of the memories of this. So we'll get there.
I understand how it could be a good memory, a visual memory for a 5-year-old, because it's like there's so many visual effects and the music is great in this movie. But I mean, just the opening scenes of the crew with their basic names of Alex, Dan, Charles, and Kate, and Harry. Like, so silly. It's just good old American names. But this has the whole look, like you were saying, of a Star Trek, of a Disney-fied Star Trek. Everything's a little soft, but it's really technological. Like, there's a hard sci-fi edge to this that I love.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's elements in here. There's so much stuff happening. Like, sometimes, as creative people ourselves, sometimes there'll be something that'll spark your imagination and will lead you down your own creative paths.
Yep.
And I think Star Wars really sparked the imagination of so many creators. So much of the stuff like came out of these guys' heads, and there's so much of this kind of shared stuff, because there's stuff in here that looks like the big ship that they find. It looks like something out of Aliens.
Oh, very much so.
Or Alien, you know. And like you said, the inside, the interiors of the ship, there's a lot of like Star Trek, the motion picture feel
yep.
of stuff in there. There's some Star Wars-ish feel stuff in there, but it feels like its own thing. It doesn't feel totally ripped off like that funny Hasselhoff movie we were talking about.
Yeah.
It definitely has its own original thing going on, for sure. It's interesting, too. We'll get to it later, but this movie could... Well, I'll just say it right now, and because this is a Disney movie. Yeah. This movie could have easily been done and easily worked, and I dare say might have performed better if it was an animated film.
Oh, I see that. Yeah, yeah.
So I did the research on this to look and see where this came from. It was interesting to me that it came out of a script that had been around for a while that was supposed to be a space disaster movie, because I was convinced that it came straight out of like Disney animation and was like, hey, this, to me, it looked like this was an animated movie that they were like, oh, we have to make it live action because Star Wars.
Oh, that's probably true. Yeah, yeah.
So, but it's not that. But it felt like that. So it felt very Disney, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, feels very Disney. And then for me, it feels very Star Trek and Twilight Zone-ish, but that comes later.
Yeah. Also, there's also like Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Elements in there of the era of Doctor, the 70s era.
Yeah. But you did mention the ship that they find. You were talking about the design of that. You said it was very Aliens-esque, but that just fits the category of that hard sci-fi-ish nature where it seems like something that people would realistically build in a NASA sense rather than like a Star Wars sense, you know? Star Wars sense is a little bit more samurai, you know, Japanese-based, like unique design. This seems like, oh, that's a ship built to sit outside of a black hole.
Yeah, all the ships seemed like spaceships. They seemed like they were kind of like informed by the actual space program that these guys weren't too far away from. I mean, they were still landing people on the moon just a few years before this.
Yep.
So it seems really informed by that type of thing. Plus, it has a little mix in of the before the space program stuff, like the stuff from the 50s, that kind of sci-fi. So yeah. It's this kind of interesting blend of those two things.
A little bit of Isaac Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke vibe. Yep.
Yeah, for sure. So as Mikey said, we start off on the USS Palomino, which is it looks very much like kind of a glorified lunar lander looking ship.
Yep.
And the crew has, like you said, the Captain Dan, Captain Dan Holland, First Officer, Lieutenant Charlie Pizer, a journalist played by Ernest Borgnine, Harry Booth. They sent a journalist up there. I guess we're supposed to believe we're in an era of space travel that's so safe, relatively, that you can just throw a journalist up there.
The human witness, the human archivist or whatever.
Right, right. Of course, I mean, journalists do go to war zones and those aren't safe, but yeah. You know what I mean.
Yep.
And then we have an ESP-sensitive scientist.
That was so surprising, but yes.
Dr. Kate McCrae and the leader of the expedition, Dr. Alex Durant.
Yes.
And don't forget my favorite as a kid, the little robot Vincent.
Vital information necessary, centralized.
And Vincent he's really R2-3PO.
Exactly. He's the perfect combination. he's got all the power and usefulness of R2, but he's got all the quips and the comebacks and the snappy remarks of C-3PO.
Yes.
It's great.
R2-3PO. And I really, really remembered him. And our buddy Ralph talked. I think Ralph talked about these robots and when we're choosing our robots for one of our builder crews.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons he brought it up, I think, how cool the robots were.
Yeah. And so very, Vincent is so very Disney looking. I guess he could easily be animated and I could see him being animated. So one of the things that got me right away was all the wire work they were doing in the ship because there was weightlessness. And I thought it looked pretty good.
I mean, if you know what you're looking for, you can kind of tell the giveaways of it, but it's all practical and it works really, really well.
Yeah. I read that they actually, it was hard back then because you couldn't digitally erase the wires. So they had to paint the wires to whatever the background was, which was a pain in the butt. And apparently what they also did was to throw people off. And now I almost want to go back and watch it again is they filmed them upside down. So the wires went down instead of going up.
Yeah, I could see that for some of the scenes.
I thought that was interesting and creative because if you're looking for a wire, then you're looking for it going up. You wouldn't be looking for it going down, so you wouldn't even see it.
Exactly. And it also seems like they had some sort of like where they turn the room and the camera like at different times kind of effect going on. So
yeah, for sure. I was reading that they tried to borrow Industrial Light and Magic's stuff.
Yep.
But they were like, no, we're using it for things. So,
AKA more Star Wars.
Yeah. So they had to come up with their own like technology. So Disney had to invent its own technology.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think they called it ACES. I forget what it stands for.
But yeah. I think that's right.
They set up their own ILM. It's like, fine, we'll build our own.
And they did a lot of interesting things. They were using the matte stuff and the miniature stuff like Star Wars was using. But then they had this huge animation studio and all this experience in doing like matte backgrounds and stuff. So they mixed that into it too. So there's a lot of animation that happens here. The whole black hole is like just animated.
Yeah.
Spinning there. And a lot of the backgrounds aren't even there. They're actually like matte paintings that were put in later.
Yep.
And they used a lot of the kind of animation type sliding, moving background thing. So that's kind of cool.
I have to input with one point of trivia. I was going to mention it later, but it's coming up now. Here's a fun little trivia bit between Star Wars and this movie. All the matte painting done for this movie was done by Peter Ellenshaw, son of Harrison Ellenshaw. Harrison Ellenshaw did all the matte paintings for the original trilogy of Star Wars.
Ah.
So it was Star Wars legacy passing it on to his son. That's why all the matte backgrounds in this movie look great. It's classic sci-fi. It's awesome.
It's great, yeah. So one of the things that, other than the wire work, one of the things that initially got me was at the very beginning, the soundtrack of this, the music is great.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it was, who did the music? I have it here in front of me.
John Barry.
Yes, John Barry, who I don't know any of his other stuff, but hey, it was really good. I liked it a lot. It was funny because the music starts first, and they're doing like kind of like the initial, what do you call it?
Setting the tone, yeah. Like,
yeah.
There is a word for it, though.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. A cinephile, I'm not.
The prelude? I don't know.
That's what it is. It's the prelude.
There it is.
So did yours have the prelude too? I thought my something was wrong with my...
Yeah, because if you're watching on Disney Plus, it's like a black screen for an entire orchestral movement.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if it was intentional or if like maybe there was like production screens for companies that they took out and just left a black screen until like the Disney title cards come up.
I think it's intentional. I think it's a prelude.
And it does a great job of setting the tone.
Because they used to do that. Because think of how dark the theater would be with just that booming symphonic score playing.
Yeah, I was convinced this was John Williams before I went and looked it up after I watched it. But
yeah.
It's very like fanfare-esque and, you know, bombastic. It's great.
Yeah, it's really good. So as we said, we get to see the crew kind of floating around and they have some initial small talk, kind of like light character building.
Yes.
I'd say that it's kind of funny to me. The thing that keeps a lot of this from going into Mystery Science Theater 3000 territory is the fact that you have the Ernest Borgnines and Anthony Perkins and you have these skins on the wall actors who put into the mouth of lesser actors, it would be very kind of corny, I think.
Yeah, they're taking it seriously. It looks like they're giving it their all. They're not like, what are we doing in this weird space flick?
No, I mean, at that point, Star Wars had been so huge. I'm sure that they were excited to be in something.
Yeah, but because it is hard sci-fi, we do get the banter between all of them setting up like, oh, Dr. This, you're in charge of this. Have you been checking the blah, blah, blahs? And it's like, yes. Have you been talking to your robot with your brain? Yes.
That was the thing, too. There's this funny, like, nothing goes super deep in this, which it doesn't need to. But as nerds and as a sci-fi nerd, you're like, so now in the future, they have people who have ESP and robots who have ESP. I mean, that's really cool.
It's super cool, but it's so weird. Like, okay, that's just, this is a thing that exists in this movie.
Yeah, it's like, who thought of that? And then what's inside the robot that makes that happen? Or is there something inside her? Oh, what if it's that? What if she's like got some kind of cybernetic thing and it's not actual like ESP?
She's got an ESP chip.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Here, look, we can write it because no one's ever going to. Man, I didn't think of this movie until Ralph mentioned it to me, and this movie just has no cult following that I've ever seen before. I've never seen memes out of it or anything.
The only thing like Vincent himself shows up in a couple memes on the internet, but that's the only thing I recognized out of this entire movie.
Yeah. So, as you said, they discover a black hole with a very large ship nearby, and then they find out it's the long-lost USS Cygnus, and it's the ship that Kate's father served on before it went missing.
Personal connection.
So they decide to investigate, and that's where we get our first little action thing where they're like, it's crazy to go that close to a black hole. And they're like, well, this thing seems fine over there. It should have been torn apart by now.
Yeah.
Then they start accelerating towards it and getting scared, and then when they get near it, they're like, the gravity from the black hole went away. Amazing.
It's like we're in the eye of a hurricane.
Yes.
We must be safe.
And then they get to the other side of it and almost get ripped apart, torn into the black hole.
Oh, action montage. Yes. 70s style, yeah. Which means it's a little bit slower, a little bit more paced.
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit more paced. You have to watch this movie with 70s goggles on, for sure.
Oh, but it's in the best way. Yes.
Well, I think that's the thing that we kind of do here at Assuming Positions, just so everybody knows. We kind of meet a movie where it's at when we do reassumptions. Because, I mean, stuff doesn't hold up a lot of times anyway. Even good stuff doesn't hold up. But the reason why classics are classic is because they do hold up. And we don't reassume classics here on Assuming Positions.
Yep.
We reassume things that we remember as kids, that we remember as might have been good, that are cult classics, to see if they still stack up.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things we do, one of the tricks we do, and we encourage you to do it too, is meet a movie where it's at. Unless you know it's a classic, unless you know it's a Back to the Future or, you know, Star Wars or any of these things that just have transcended the era that they were in.
Yeah, yeah.
Some movies are of their time, and anyone who watches Turner Classic Movies a lot will have to, will be familiar with doing that. You just have to kind of meet a movie where it's at.
An inserted hot take for that is I think this movie holds up way better than something like Tron as far as graphics and visuals go.
It's interesting because Tron was Disney too, right?
Yep, and around the same time.
I think it came out after this, and you can see a lot in a lot of the visual effects. You can see kind of pre-Tron stuff in there. I noticed for sure.
But they get sucked into a black hole, almost, and they almost lose Vincent because he goes out to the outside of the ship to repair it. But we get to see his cool little magnetic tether and his cool clamps and all his R2-D2 features.
Dude, that was the thing that got me. When he went out and did that, I'm like, dude, that's R2 in the prequels. That's R2 like 20 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, R2 never did that in the original Star Wars. He was just in the back.
That's it.
He was just in the back of the little, in the little droid slot in the X-Wing and just had his little arm going out fixing stuff. But he didn't, like, go out and walk on the ship until the prequels.
Yep.
So that's interesting to me.
Point for Vincent. He's got magnetic feet and tethers.
Yeah. That was great. Then when they start flying back to the Cygnus, when they make it back into the gravity well or whatever was keeping the gravity normal there.
Yep.
The lights come on. So it's like mysterious. And Kate's like, I know there's people out there. I see the people. And
I sense them with my brain chip and also this computer.
Yeah. So the ship took so much damage that they were like, well, we have to go ahead and dock with the ship and see if there's anything on there that we can use to fix our ship. Makes perfect sense.
Yep.
That's the thing, too, about this movie that I'll give a credit for until the end. But until I'll give a credit for, as opposed to a lot of these really bad sci-fi movies, there aren't a lot of leaps of
suspension of disbelief or no?
Yes, yes. There's not a lot of suspension of disbelief. I mean, this even has less than, I think, the Star Wars sequels where people have to deal with things.
Yeah.
I mean, it was perfectly logical for them to dock on the ship.
Yep, and they do it in a way like manual override. I'm taking controls. You man that station and make sure our thrusters are in line. Like, they, it at least sounds appropriate.
Yes. So they get on there, and of course, everything is like wonderfully creepy and mysterious. Doors are opening on their own, and they don't know who's there, what's going on. And then they get their like cool, those guns they had, those original, the ones they had on the ship. Later on, we see a different version of the guns.
Yep.
But those original, those were super cool looking.
Very. It was like proto-phasers, man.
Yeah. But immediately he gets his nice gun blown out of his hand by some unseen laser something.
Yep. And they shoot Vincent. So they shoot all the technology and weapons.
And then they're like, well, I guess we'll have to go without weapons. And then creepy doors keep opening and they're being led somewhere.
It's that invisible thread, whatever that trope is. It's like, we must push forward. There must be a control center or somebody around. Let's go find them.
Now, I like how these characters don't go very deep, but they could have if they wanted to. I mean, you can tell what they're trying to do.
Yes.
You can tell what they're trying to do. You can tell the captain, and a lot of it just has to do with the actors they picked for it, which is good. That's good casting. You can tell that the captain is a veteran. He's been through it, and nothing really phases him that much.
The mission comes first, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the first officer is trying to prove himself. Old Pizer there, you know.
he's the one that jokes around with Vincent the most. They got the most witty repertoire.
And then you got the Dr. Durant. That's a
stand-in Spock.
Yes, he's a, yes. He's a very Spock character. Oh, that's a good one. And just Ernest Borgnine's there being Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, he's like the human component.
Yeah.
He's like, guys, look at my smile. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. And then Dr. Kate, like you said, I do think she has a chip in her. She seems very kind of like Data-like.
Yeah, yeah. But she's also like the human compassion mom component of the ship, it seems to.
Yes, a Beverly Crusher type.
Oh, absolutely. That's perfect. Yeah. See, Star Trek all over the place. That's why I had a fun time with this movie.
So then we start. We get the first visual I remember
yes.
from when I was a kid is when they go in that they're led into the control room.
On the little like the train cart, space cart thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They take the train cart over, which is fun. And you could tell that they made this for a theater to like when you're sitting on the seat, you feel like you're on that thing too.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But again, we have great matte painting. This is where I noticed it first, like where I was like, oh, cool. The backgrounds are really rad looking. And you can tell where they had to like mask it out. Like you can see the edges. It's a 70s movie. That's where it doesn't really hold up. But if you squint your eyes a little bit, it looks really cool.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's kind of funny that you say that because we're talking about the animated black hole that you see a lot in this because the movie's called The Black Hole and there's a big black hole over there. When I was watching it, one of my kids came by and was like, what's this? What you watching? And they're like, oh, is that a black hole? And I was like, that's pretty cool looking.
Awesome. 14-year-old approved.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but this control room with the weird, like, caped people in there and everything, it's all dark and the silhouette. That hit my brain being like, oh, I remember that.
Yeah. What I have in my notes when that scene happened is, holy HQ, Batman, because there's like huge panels all over the place. They've got widescreen TVs for the 70s.
Yeah.
There's a big, view panel. But then you have these creepy robed figures. Like, what is that about?
Yeah. And then we get the villain in the dark turnaround.
We do.
Right?
Well, first comes his robot.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The one bit of suspense is we learn his name is Maximilian, but Maximilian comes down and this is the first appearance of his spinny arm blades. He's like, yeah. Intruder alert! Intruder alert! I could mangle you with these. But the robot is stopped by, like you were saying, the classic yes. villain dark turnaround.
Yeah, dark turnaround. These are our guests type thing, you know?
Maximilian, treat them nicely.
I am Hans Reinhardt.
I know they tried to maybe set it up like he wasn't a bad guy at first, but they named the character Hans Reinhardt. I mean,
and he's playing the character like Dracula and Bram Stoker's. Like he's like Dracula through the whole thing, pretty much.
Yeah, he's got the scruffy bad guy beard. He's got the half cape. He's all decked out in red. I mean, come on, dude. Like. Maybe put on a lab coat or something. I don't know.
Oh, but still, yes. Hans Reinhardt, who's apparently the only person left alive on the ship. Who are these? Is this your crew? And he's like, oh, they're robots I built because I sent the crew away.
Yep.
They didn't return to Earth? What are you talking about? Huh?
Yeah, because a point they discovered earlier that we missed was the reason they go investigate the ship in the first place is because it's that U.S. ship, but they realize that it's from 20 years ago. Like, it's been that long. So it yeah. makes sense that the crew isn't around because it has been a long time. But why is he the only one left?
And he built all these crazy robots in the meantime.
Because he's a genius. We find out he's a scientist. Like, the reason everything's up and going is because he made it that way.
Yeah, it's the reason why they're not getting sucked into the black hole because he figured out how to create a gravity well.
Yeah, that's the eye of the hurricane they were talking about. That's all
yes.
created by him. So dude must be super smart.
Yes, so they're all intrigued and stuff. But the captain's not that intrigued because he's very matter of fact. And he's like, hey, our ship's busted. I'm glad you're here. Can we get parts for our ship so yes. we can fix it and get out of here? And of course, all the scientists with him and the reporter guy, too, are kind of like, hey, man, we want to check out what's going on. He's like, OK, you can check out what's going on until our ship is fixed.
Yes.
And then we're done. So this is where we get our fun next scene that I want to talk about in my notes. Because when they go to the parts department, Vincent and Maximilian leads Vincent and our first lieutenant buddy,
Charlie.
Over to the parts department. We get to meet the beat up Vincent bot named Bob, right?
Yeah, he's like Vincent 2.0.
Yeah, and Vincent would be Vincent 5.0 or something. I don't know. It's been 20 years, so there's been lots of updates. But the funniest thing to me is when they get together, the two of them, because of the way Vincent's eyes look with the white eyes and the red and everything.
Yep.
And the way he talks and the way that Bob is like, hey, man, what's going on? I was like, oh my gosh, this is Lightning McQueen and Mater.
Oh, it really is. Especially
because he's all beat up and was like, hey, what's going on over here? And the other guy's like, I was like, man, all Vincent has to say is ka-chow once.
But Bob is great. He's got that Slim Pickens twang.
Yeah. It's so funny. Oh my gosh. And but that was like, it was so, that right there was like, oh, here's Disney.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I love that they justified it too, because Vincent like scans him or identifies him and realizes that he was built in Houston. So like that's why that robot has a southern twang. It was this Houston programmers.
Oh my goodness gracious. It
justified hard sci-fi, man. This movie's doing great.
Oh my goodness. That's really funny.
But they did split up the party, so we have part of the crew going to the parts department. We have the captain going off to the crew quarters of the original crew of the ship. And then we have Dr. Kate McCrae and Dr. Durant stand behind with Victor Von Doom. I mean, Hans Reinhardt.
Not only that, also Harry Booth, the journalist, decides to kind of like drop a penny or tie his shoe or whatever. And he goes running off on his own, too.
Yeah, he goes off on his own. He finds, I think, the Arboretum or the garden or whatever.
Yeah, they're setting up for later on. This is all foreshadowing. I mean, the captain was heading back to the ship to get stuff ready to fix. And Harry Booth is a reporter, so he's being all investigative-y.
Yeah.
So he finds, Harry Booth finds the place where they're growing all the food. And it's this cool, like, arboretum. It's really big, and there's tons of food being grown. Then the captain kind of gets lost on purpose, maybe, and because he sees the robots bury a robot at sea.
Yeah, they're having a space funeral.
Yeah, and he's like, "Huh?"
Especially because they're all in robes, and it's like, "What?"
Yeah, so he gets all kinds of curious, and he's like, "What's going on with these robots over here?" So he kind of starts poking around, and he finds the crew quarters. And I like how they don't. This is the one thing I like about old movies.
Yes.
They don't explain nothing to you. I was probably really confused when I was five. Hopefully I wasn't the kid going like, what's going on? But anyway, you had to realize that like he goes into one of the different barracks, these barracks rooms, and he goes into one of them and he picks up a family picture and he's like, why would you leave your family picture here? He doesn't say that, but
you can tell by his face, yeah.
And then he opens up the closet. And you just see him going through and like all the clothes are there and all the shoes are there.
Yeah.
But he never says or does anything. But the context is there. These people didn't evacuate.
Yeah. There wasn't a disaster or anything. Like everything sort of looked like they would have left it.
Yes. And then also Harry Booth sees one of those robots who was tending to the garden leave with a limp.
He's like, wait, robots don't limp.
Yeah.
They just talk telepathically. That's okay. But limping is wrong.
Oh, my goodness. Also, this is strangely in my notes in the middle of this part we're talking about here. But I said, in the future, there are turtlenecks and still bell bottoms.
Yes.
But the turtlenecks, I justify, is that it looks very sailor-y. It makes them look like sailors, appropriate for that type of thing. But the bell bottoms was kind of... Hey, we're still in the 70s over here.
Yep.
My goodness.
And then the last part of the crew is not bad guy, Hans Reinhardt. Just kidding, he's bad guy. With Kate McCrae and Dr. Durant, and they're chatting in the control tower, and Dr. Durant is slowly becoming enthralled with Dr. Reinhardt, and he's like, oh, well, it's going to take some time to fix your ship, so why don't we have a dinner party?
Yes.
All Dracula style.
And all dressed like Dracula. He even had the little medal around his neck and stuff.
I mean you no harm, but I am going to feed you poison food.
This is where it starts getting really suspicious for old Harry Ernest Borgnine Booth, because he makes the comment saying, like, the mushrooms were grown here. And he's like, yeah, you must have a really big place to grow all the food. And he's like, oh, no, just enough for me. And then he's like, oh, that's not true. I saw it. He's thinking...
Or he's thinking, how much food do you eat? That room is huge.
Hilarious.
And at the dinner party is when Reinhardt gives his plan away. He's like, he's megalomania. He's like, I'm going to be the greatest scientist ever. I'm on the search for the universal truth. And the universal truth lies on the other side of the black hole. And that's where I intend to go.
Yes. it's kind of funny that the whole, like, everything kind of gets turned upside down by Vincent and Bob, right?
Oh, yeah. We skipped this. This was amazing.
Yeah.
As the crew head to the dinner party, Bob and Vincent meet up again at the robot dinner party that's going on concurrently.
It's the robot shooting gallery party. It's the robot arcade.
Yeah, it's the arcade party room. Like, they don't eat, but they play shooting games and start bar fights with each other.
Yeah, there's multiple kinds of robots in this. But as far as the majority of the crew of the ship are the black-robed, like, mirror face shield robots. But then there's the security robots who are kind of like red stormtroopers, except for that one black one.
Yeah, the Darth Vader of them all, but yeah, they got red bug-looking ones and one black bug-looking one.
Yeah, and it's really funny because here's the memory I was going to tell you about. When I was a kid, at first, I thought stormtroopers were robots.
Okay.
And not people, but I think it's because of this movie, because those are robots.
Absolutely.
And they're very stormtrooper-y looking. I mean, they're obviously like, we need something like stormtroopers, and here we go, these red robots. But they have those cool, like, two-barrel blasters that they have on each hip.
Looks like a Halo weapon.
Yeah, it does look like a Halo weapon. But when they... Bob accidentally, like, gets a ricochet and kills the Darth Vader one. But the way...
Well, no,
the way that
Bob loses, it's Vincent that gets the ricochet by doing the cool Vincent flip move.
That's right.
Bob, and that's how they become robot buddies.
Oh, my goodness.
I have to point out that it's so silly that robots are playing a video game that's like just machine learning, and it doesn't look like either machine is learning. And it's just like, okay, this is a program fighting a program. Neat. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Hall of Justice, at the human dinner party, Reinhardt is revealing his weird megalomania. Durant is following in his footsteps even more. He's like, this man is a genius. He's smart. He's the smartest man I've ever seen. But while they're all chatting, Reinhardt's info probe from the black hole comes back, and he's like, if these calculations are correct, then I can take my journey tomorrow, maybe even tonight.
I must go prepare.
Yes. And he exits the room, leaving the crew alone to start fighting. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah, and then this is where everything comes out. I saw the crew quarters and nothing was gone. I saw the place and there's way more food than he's talking about. And the robot was limping and all this stuff. And they, of course, Durant's like, you're crazy. Yeah. Here's an excuse for that. Here's an excuse for that.
Also, I want to stay here.
Yeah. I want to live with him.
So does Vincent show up at the dinner party? I forget that part. But
he doesn't show up at the dinner party, but they... For some reason, it's Bob Robot reveals everything that's going on to Vincent.
Oh, yeah. He takes him to, like, the where they make the crew, the labor and tech crew.
Yeah. And then Vincent ends up going all, like Terminator on the other robots. Do you remember they kill two of them and then have to hide them?
Oh, yeah. Well, air quotes around the word hide, because it ends up just being Bob and Vincent, like, dumping them behind the desk. Be like, surely nobody will find that. It's like, why not? Don't you have an incinerator? I mean, you did space burial. Come on. You can do better at evidence than that.
Well, especially since I just found here in my notes that Bob stands for Biosanitation Battalion.
There it is.
So he's actually, like, a cleaning robot.
He is. But for bio stuff, that means there's a human cleaning robot.
So he doesn't know. I don't know what to do with this stuff.
Yeah. I only know what to do with humans.
I just know how to clean up toilets and stuff. I don't know what to do going on with this.
But I realized how the crew does find out the things that Bob is showing Vincent is that's where I found out that Kate, that's where it clicked. I must have missed it when they set it up in the beginning, but this is where we see Kate use her ESP with Vincent. And Vincent's like, Kate, come in. Something's wrong with these funky robot techs.
Yeah. Bad things are happening.
And so that plants the question in them is like, what's the deal with this crew? Are they robots? Dun, dun, dun.
And we find out that they aren't robots.
Oh, such a great reveal.
Yes. They are, in fact, the crew.
But repurposed and put into inside robots.
They've been like lobotomized and reprogrammed.
They've been robotomized.
Yes.
But the reveal for this, that's where I mentioned Twilight Zone earlier, because when they pull off the mask, the face looks exactly like the old Twilight Zone episode of The Mask, where, like, you had the whole townspeople wearing masks over their face and they took it off and that's what their faces just actually look like, all creepy and gaunt. And I was like, oh, Twilight Zone.
Yeah. And he's like,
Meanwhile, Reinhardt did get his info probe back and the calculations are correct. So he's like, eternal life is on the other side of the black hole. So I'm going to start this journey now. We're steering the ship towards the black hole.
Yeah. And he's saying, it's funny because he sits down at his little desk thing and he starts going like, A squared, B squared, C squared. I'm like, I don't think that's real math. He just starts saying letters and squared. That's kind of silly.
You could at least throw in like a cubed or a hypotenuse or a triangulate. I mean, come on. Not everything is squared.
It was just funny to me. A squared, B squared, C squared. I got to say it, man. At this point, we've been kind of talking about it a little bit. The villain character, he plays it so broad. It's like the weakest link in this whole thing to me.
I get it.
Like, it's so broad and so just... Some parts of this are very like, oh, hey, they're trying to really do a sci-fi. And then some parts of it are, oh, this is a Disney kids thing.
Yes.
And especially when he, like, starts, like, beating himself on the forehead at one point and just getting upset is... It was after basically Durant's under his thrall and Kate's like, I gotta tell you something, Durant, come over here.
Yeah.
It's like, this is where she's like, these are people. And this is where he pulls the thing off and we get that Twilight Zone moment we were talking about earlier. And then, of course, old Reinhardt's like, what are you doing? And Maximilian's like, uh-oh, you know what's going on. Time to get the egg beaters going.
Yep. They've discovered our secret. We must eliminate them.
And poor Durant tries to save himself with the Book of Research.
Oh, but what a gruesome death. I mean, for a Disney movie, you know, that's PG. They have Hells and Dams and Dr. Durant dying like just getting almost.
I guess he got scrambled.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Oh, man. Yeah, he got scrambled. And then this is where just everything's gone to heck here now. Or we can say gone to hell because it's a PG Disney movie.
It is. They used it in the movie. It's appropriate here.
Oh, man.
But the crew is still split. We have the other half of the crew now on the Palomino, their original ship, and they're all fixing it up with the parts they got. But they're also trying to get in touch with Kate because as much as Kate and Durant have found things out on their own, Vincent and the rest of the crew are also like trying to get in touch with her. Be like, hey, something screwy. We saw a robot funeral. And we think we figured it out. You need to come back to the ship. We got to leave.
So now everything just goes to hell. This is the third act of this is action.
Yes.
Action, action, action. We get Kate's taken off to get lobotomized to turn into one of the one of the crew members, I guess. I don't know what to call them. They're like kind of these weird robo zombies. Yep. I guess zombies.
There you go. Zombots.
Zombots. That's a good one. So she's about to be turned into a zombot. That's where we see some of the Tron-like animation. The lasers are like animated. And I was like, oh, that's just like in Tron. But of course, just as they're about to do it, she gets rescued by Vincent, Bob, and Holland. And it's hooray, she's been rescued. But what do we do now?
Yes.
Well, we have to get back to the ship. So they go back to their ship and it's taking off because Ernest Borgnine's a jerk all of a sudden.
He's a jerk.
I'm out of here.
But there was an element to it because, again, like we were saying earlier, they don't really over-explain too much here. It seemed like there was an element where he was like headed for the control tower, like he was sacrificing himself and the ship for some reason to take out the bad guy. But then the bad guy shoots him down. So I don't know if he was actually like meaning to just save his own skin, but probably.
He was totally meaning to save his own skin because he faked a broken leg.
Oh, I didn't realize he faked it. I thought he limped off still. Okay.
No, he ran back.
Oh, that's the part I missed, so that makes complete sense. He is a jerk. Damn you, Ernest Borgnine.
I mean, they get shot at, and old Pizer does this awesome roll move. It was really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it was a stuntman, but it was awesome. But it did an awesome roll move, and Ernest Borgnine jumps to the ground, too, and he's like, are you okay? And he's like, I think my leg is broken. And he's like, can you make it back to the ship? And he's like, oh, yeah, I think I'll be able to make it over there. And he's like, okay. And then he goes running off. And then Ernest Borgnine like waits a few beats and then gets up and then runs into the ship.
That's right.
To show that his leg is broken. No, he's getting out of there. He's like, see you later, fools.
But alas, he did not because he's shot down. And the rest of the crew was like, what do we do now?
Not only does he get shot down, but he gets shot down and then crashes into the ship.
Oh, that's right.
And knocks out whatever was keeping the ship away from the black hole. And whatever was keeping the ship out of the nearby meteor field or whatever, I guess.
That's the added suspense for the third act. It's a meteor shower, too.
Yeah. So have you watched the Midnight Sky yet? Is that what it's called?
It is Midnight Sky. I have not watched it yet.
Okay. When you watch Midnight Sky, I'm just telling you, when you watch Midnight Sky, you're going to think about that scene.
Awesome.
No spoilers, but I'm telling you, I thought the other way back. But it's just, like we said, this is all action because everything's falling apart.
Yeah.
This is where the disaster movie bones of this movie show up.
Definitely.
For sure. And there's one thing, it was probably in the trailer too, because it was the whole giant meteor rolling down the hallway, Indiana Jones style.
What a great looking scene, yeah.
As they're running across. Dude, I 100% remember seeing that in a dark theater and just being scared. So scared.
It's a really impressive shot, yeah.
So just imagine a five-year-old seeing that. I was just like, no!
It's going to burn me!
So everything's going crazy. The whole time, Reinhardt's been watching them on his little screen. So he sends Maximilian out to take care of him once and for all.
Yep.
Their plan is, now that their ship is gone, that the probe ship is still there, the probe ship that's being prepared to go into the black hole by Reinhardt. And they're, yes, like, well, let's try and beat him to it. So that's where they're running to.
Essentially the escape pod, yes.
Right. And Maximilian had been sent to start the preparations on the probe, so he was there. So he's in the way. So they have to get past him. And Maximilian, oh no, he shoots Bob. No.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then we get another one of our Disney moments where it's stuff dies in Disney things sometimes. Disney can be dark sometimes.
Well, Vincent does, you know, take care of Maximilian. That's a really cool scene because he does more R2-D2 awesome stuff where he drills into his core.
Well, you know what that was? That was Vincent doing to Maximilian what he did to the doctor.
Oh, that's true. A callback.
He scrambled his insides.
That's true.
It was revenge. Sweet, sweet revenge.
But then we do get the Disney scene I think you were talking about where Vincent goes back for Bob. And Bob's like, I don't know, partner. I've been hurt pretty bad. All my thrusters are gone. My spurs came off. And I don't think I can go much farther.
Oh, man. That must have made me so sad when I was five.
But here's the bull crap. Here's hot take. Vincent totally could have used his little magnetic tether that he used to save his life in the first act to latch onto Bob and just drag him behind him. I mean, come on. Robots for life.
Yeah, you're 100%. He could have taken him with him.
Yeah.
For sure.
But instead, he left him behind to go save Charlie. Anyway.
Yeah. So they don't have to worry about Maximilian, and they don't have to worry about Reinhardt, because Reinhardt faces, like, death by Jumbotron.
No, death by TV. It was awesome to see, but kind of, like, inconsequential. It's like, okay, what a crappy way to go out for a real smart guy.
It was like a flat screen TV. Like, how many inches do you think that flat screen was?
Maybe a 70-inch, about 3 inches wide. Like, he probably could have lifted it, but he's a nerd. He doesn't have that upper body strength.
Yeah, death by 70-inch flat screen. He's crushed. He's, like, pinned under it. But it's the sweet justice, I think, supposed to be, is he's asking for help.
Yeah.
And everyone's been lobotomized, so they can't help him.
They feel nothing. The robed figures do not respond. Oh, yes. Sweet irony.
Sweet irony. Crew I have created.
What a cruel fate I am facing with this TV atop me that I cannot move.
Oh.
So yeah, that's how Reinhardt goes out. Death by TV. Maximilian's gone. But that means the crew can get to the probe ship.
Yes, they get into the probe ship and are able to blast away from the ripping apart Cygnus as it gets ripped apart. Because it's lost all its gravity field stuff.
Yeah, it's got too many meteor holes in it and starting to implode on itself. There's multiple breaches and all that stuff.
But I guess the probe still has its gravity field stuff and is in working order. Unfortunately, the crew can't fly away because it's been pre-programmed to go into the black hole.
No, the thing we've avoided all movie. I didn't see that coming.
You didn't?
No, I did. I should have been a little bit more sarcastic. I totally didn't see that coming.
Oh, man. But this is where the movie goes insane, dude. How confused was my five-year-old brain? It must have been very confused, because my 47-year-old brain was, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
It, like, totally turned into something else.
It's the trippiest ending for a Disney movie I can probably think of.
I read someone say it like it went straight Fantasia to put
that's
in
true. Yeah.
To a Disney context.
I can see that.
They go into the black hole and there's, I forget what order stuff happens in, but there's all kinds of crazy stuff. There's all kinds of like weird spinning around things and zooming in on people's eyeballs. And
yeah, the black hole is like making their inner monologues like echo through their heads as they're spinning around and yeah. they're sort of like feeling the effects of it. And then it ends with that weird face stretch out, morphing, zoom into the eyeball. It's like, wow, this is what the 70s were about. Okay, I think I get it.
Well, and then there's that really weird thing where Reinhardt's body and Maximilian's body slam into each other.
Yep.
In the middle of space. And next thing you know, he's trapped inside Maximilian's body in hell.
Yeah. They both go through the black hole and we see them in this red landscape and there's a long zoom out and you realize that Reinhardt's now in Maximilian and Maximilian is standing with like six arms on a mountaintop in a lava hellscape that looks like Mustafar or something. It's just like... like, what? Is that the end times?
And there's all the black cloaked figures, but instead of mirrored masks, they have skulls.
Yeah. But
what is going on, dude?
But they kind of set that up. You know where those robed figures came from? Those are all the space burials.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But why would they get sent to hell, though?
I think they were just trying...
Or are they there to torment him?
To torment him, because he was their creator, but... They tried it. There was a couple of heavy monologues, like the dialogue is heavy throughout this movie, but I think it was at the dinner party where he's talking about like on the other side of the black hole lies eternal life. And he sort of like scientifically explains it as heaven, like I will live forever. And they're like, that's impossible. He's like, nobody tells me what's impossible. So I think this was the twist on it. It's like, you were expecting heaven. Guess what? You're in space hell.
He said something like impossible is a word in an idiot's dictionary or something. I forget. He says something
I have it in my notes. Hold on. Oh, it's such a great line. The word impossible, Dr. Booth, is only found in the dictionary for fools. That's so great. That's Victor Von Doom all the way.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So yes, he has to spend eternal life being in hell, I guess. And then the crew ends up heading towards some planet. Somewhere it seemed like they might have gone to heaven, but then they were in their ship flying towards a planet.
Yeah, we see them exit the black hole through this heavens looking almost Emerald City Wizard of Oz hallway, and then bloop, yeah. They get shot out into safe space, like all the stars are still there, and then they show a planet in the distance that's being eclipsed by, we guess, the sun, but I couldn't tell if it was Earth. Could you?
It didn't look like Earth to me.
Is this like sequel setup?
Yes, dude, it was 100%. That was 100% Black Hole 2.
I believe it.
Because your next adventure is them landing on this alien planet and having to have another adventure and figure out where they are and all this kind of stuff. I mean, yeah. But the problem was is that this movie did terrible at the box office because it came out 2 weeks before the Star Trek movie came out.
Oh, okay.
And I think it knocked it off because it's Star Trek.
But what a trippy ending. Like, they go through the black hole and just bloop, out through the other side. Way to battle your personal demons and you're safe. Maybe. Question mark?
So, yes, Star Trek, the motion picture, so the first Star Trek movie was released the same month.
Oh, yeah, they didn't stand a chance then.
No, they didn't, because that movie was huge.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Wikipedia says for the black hole, it had a budget of $20 million and at the box office made $35 million. So, essentially broke even.
Yeah, with all the marketing and all that kind of stuff, probably. So, yeah, The Black Hole, 1979. Now, this is the part where we do our pizza rating, and our pizza rating is based on an entire pie of pizza cut into 8 slices.
Yep.
And we'll say how many slices of pizza this movie is. We can put toppings on it, take toppings off, change what style of pizza it is depending on how we want to rate the movie. So
yep.
In the real world, this movie wasn't rated very well at all.
No. Nope. 2 stars by Siskel and Ebert and panned, at least according to Wikipedia, by a variety of critics. So
yeah. And even the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes isn't very good either. But hey, man, I saw this movie when I was 5 and I loved it. So, but Mikey, you're the new eyes and new ears for this movie. So tell us what kind of pizza rating you're giving this movie, Mikey.
Well, like I said, I went into this cold, like, I knew the title, and that was it. I didn't know setup, I didn't know premise, I didn't know, like, who made it, who was in it. I just sat down and watched it and let it roll, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, it's a cheese pizza, because it's 70s and some of, you know, you can tell it's 70s, but it's a cheese 8 out of 8 slices for me. I could watch
I know.
I enjoyed it. I could watch this a few more times. It's got a great Star Trek vibe. I'm a huge Trekkie, or Trekker, sorry. I got to say it the right way. It's got those Twilight Zone suspense vibes. Big fan of that. The music is great. The computer effects, you know, they are dated, but they worked really well. And all the matte paintings. This movie was nominated for 2 Oscars for cinematography and visual effects. So, I mean, at least people took notice of that. The biggest pan of the critics was the heavy dialogue, but I kind of loved it. I love the drama of Hans Reinhardt. Like, I love an over-the-top bad guy. It was great.
Wow. I didn't expect that at all.
Yep.
But, hey, man, that's cool. You found a movie.
Thank you, Ralph, for one of my new favorites. That's a perfect Sunday afternoon movie right there.
Wow, that's great. Well, for me, so the part of the fun of doing our reassumptions is us talking about it. And oftentimes my initial pizza rating will shift one way or the other as we talk through it. Because you kind of have to talk through stuff or think about stuff to realize whether you how much you liked it or not. So originally I was like, okay, this movie's to me was more enjoyable than average. An average would be a 4 slicer. So I would have come at you giving it 5 out of 8.
Yep.
But as I talked about it and started realizing that, hey, you know what? It wasn't that bad. It did have good nostalgia in it. I think that I want to put my 5-year-old nostalgia goggles on this movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it a solid 6 out of 8 slices of pizza for this movie. Anything coming off of it is a little bit of the villain was a little too broad for me sometimes. Yeah. Goofy. Just some of the general goofiness and stuff. Like I said, if this would had worse actors in it, it would be an MST3K movie 100%.
Especially with lines like, I never thought I'd play a straight man to a tin can.
Yeah. Yeah, it's goofy in that way. So I'm going to give it a solid 6 out of 8 slices of pizza.
There you go.
Which is a good rating for me, for sure. I think that's what is. Isn't that what someone got mad at me for giving out to something once?
A Knight's Tale, I think, was somebody got grumpy about the 6 out of 8.
6 out of 8. 6 out of 8 means I like it.
There you go.
There were some goofy things in there. So
I would have accepted 5 slices with heavy toppings either way.
So, or yes, I could have done 5 slices with lots of toppings too. But I'm just going to go, you went plain, so I'm going to go plain there too. Okay. So it's 6 plain. I do have to say though, and I said this earlier in the pod, and I'm going to say it again now. I think that if this was a Disney animated film with the exact same script and the exact same acts, and don't change anything, make it the exact same movie animated, I would have given it an 8 out of 8 probably.
I got you.
And you probably have to take out those dams and hells to give it the G to make it animated, and that wouldn't make any difference because those were just thrown in there to give it a PG.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have hurt anything in the movie anyway. And even the deaths and stuff, I mean, come on. Bambi's mom. I mean, this.
Oh, that's true. But
you see what I'm saying? Yeah. There's Disney movies have had tragic deaths all the time anyway. But I think the thing at the time, too, most Disney movies are musicals, right? Even then?
Yeah, because
the animated ones. Were they making any animated movies that didn't have songs in them?
Not at that point, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So
even the Renaissance Disney movies, the animated ones are pretty songy.
Right.
So.
Right. So. I don't even think it would be something that they would do, but anyway.
I could see Dr. Hans Reinhardt doing a musical number, though, if they did the animated version. I'd still watch it.
All right, so The Black Hole on Disney Plus, everybody. Mikey gives it 8 out of 8. I give it 6 out of 8, so it's a pretty good watch. I encourage you to put on your 70s goggles, though, if you've never seen it before.
Yes.
Or your nostalgia goggles if you have seen it before. It's not the groundbreaking thing that Star Wars is or Alien. If you're looking for something more along those lines, watch what beat it out. Go watch Star Trek, the original motion picture.
Absolutely.
And because that beat it for a reason. But if you've seen Star Trek, the original motion picture, too many times and want a little change of pace, you know? Here you go.
It'd be a nice double feature. I could do that.
So, hey, let us know what you think. Are we crazy? Is this movie to you like, why isn't this on MST3K? You guys are nuts. Or are you on Mikey's side? This is the best movie ever, but you need to put more toppings on it. Let us know.
Yes.
You can hit us up on all our social medias. We are at AssumingPod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Most active on Instagram. If you want to send us something long form, and rant at one of us, like has happened before, you can email us, assumingpositions@gmail.com. And we want to thank you guys so much for listening. We have had some good numbers again, so thanks, everybody. Mm-hmm. Please keep sharing it. Tell people about it. Start interacting with us more if you've been listening to us. Just don't be afraid. Get on there. Instagram's fun and nice. So you can use that if you don't like social media.
Yes.
And we want to thank you guys so much for listening. We also want to thank That Guy Brad for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for equipment, Jazzar for music. And we hope that you guys stay away from black holes unless you have Dr. Reinhardt's technology to fly through them.
Or a Vincent to carry you through space.
The black hole.
Oh, that's the other movie.
But we know why Ernest Borgnine walks away to be on his own.
I don't know if you have to cut that out. Anyway.
but yeah, he goes off on his own. He finds, I think, the Arboretum or the garden or whatever. But yeah.